and the king who had to go, but very knowledgeable on both world wars and, of course, the impact and the importance that our county had in those events as well. Adrian, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Very good. And yourself?
Yep, very good. Thank you very much. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us this morning. Huge significance for Kent in World War One, and particularly actually in Folkestone, wasn't there?
Absolutely. Now, Folkestone has got kind of a sad record in the First World War, because it was the first town which really suffered from aeroplane bombing. Though the Germans had tried to bomb England with airships, not very successfully, but they switched to aircraft. They set up a special unit with special aircraft, Gothas, to do it. And the very first big raid was launched on 26th of May 1916. It was intended to attack London, but the weather was against it. So the planes ended up bombing Folkestone.
We heard, actually, from a listener a wee while ago, a couple of weeks ago, we were asking, when they launched the Poppy Appeal this year, we were asking for people to tell us who they thought of during the two-minute silence. And somebody was telling us all about their family who was, they were killed in air raids in Folkestone. So, you know, that is, although it's a very, very long time ago, it's still remembered, particularly by those, obviously, that had a family connection. And, of course, Folkestone, sadly, was the last bit of England that a lot of the soldiers saw and were standing on.
Absolutely. I mean, the Kent ports, Folkestone and Dover, were the places where the leave trains left from, and where the troop trains went into. So there would have been huge traffic as the soldiers went out front, fight on the Western Front, and the lucky ones who were still there got back for their occasional leaves to Blighty, as it was called.
Mm. Yeah, no, of course it was. And we're asking this morning, Adrian, and you're perfectly qualified to answer this question. Why is it, in here we are in 2021, there's so much unpleasantness in the world going on between people, between colleagues, for various political reasons, perhaps, over the last few years. But actually, it's still important that and people put those differences to one side, and we all seem to come together and pause what we're doing for 2 minutes on Armistice Day, and of course again on Sunday for Remembrance Sunday. Why do you think it's so important that we still remember today?
Because this is not an abstract thing. It has a cost, and it is a human cost. The phrase I keep coming back to is what people did, how people describe the casualties, you know, as the guys who did not come back. These were members of families, in those days men, but now increasingly women as well, who went out to serve and did not come back. They were gone. And that was an absence in a family forever. And in the First World War, particularly, you had gigantic numbers of families who lost multiple members. And it was just this hole in people's lives for the rest of their times that I think is the particularly acute thing, that maybe now when armies are smaller we see less, because we feel much less directly the effect of casualties and losses. Mm. But it was in the First World War when it was on such a scale that, yes, it was obvious to absolutely everybody. There would be no community and practically no family that was not directly affected. So in the First World War, after the First World War, it was kind of inescapable. These days, because the numbers involved are smaller, it's less visible, but it's still important. The damage to families, the loss, is still as great.
And they'll never be forgotten, in that their names are on war memorials in every community here in Kent. If you walk into any cemetery, any churchyard here in Kent, you will see some war graves. And for me, what always strikes me are the ages on those headstones. You know, these are young. They're all right. They're in their late teens or early 20s, but they were boys.
Absolutely. No, these were people with their entire lives ahead of them just gone. But so many of them volunteered. And the vast bulk of the British forces in the First World War, even though conscription was introduced, were volunteers. So there was no reluctance to fight.
And they lied. They lied about their ages so they could go and fight.
They lied about their ages. They lied about their physical state. One thinks of Rudyard Kipling's son, who was appallingly short-sighted, yet his father pulled all the strings possible with his son's support to go to fight, and he paid. He died.
Those names on graves and the names on all our war memorials, every single one of those men has a story and had a family who had a story. And I think that is it's fascinating, but it's also very humbling as well. Adrian, thank you very much for your time this morning. Good talking with you. Adrian Phillips, local historian and the author of Fighting Churchill, Appeasing Hitler and the King Who Had to Go. 0800 756 1111 is the number to call us on to join in the conversation this morning. 81333 is the text number. Start your message with the word Kent, and you can email it steve.ladner@bbc.co.uk. In a little while, we will be crossing to the Battle of Britain Memorial at Capel le Ferne. Our reporter Joe Byrne is down there, and we will take part in their remembrance, their Armistice Day.
No, hang on.